Hey everyone, it's a brand new CU podcast.
Oi.
For Tuesday, November 30th, 2021. That's Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. We got a show today for you. It's going to be semi-entertaining. We'll be talking about what I did at Comic-Con. We'll be talking about the N64 module announced for Polymega. Atari to buy Mobi Games, which is interesting. You want to put that in the intro, you said, right? You want to swap that
one? Yeah, I feel like we don't really need to make that a full topic.
And then WADA released its first population report, so I'll have an update on that. And Q&A. So, Ian, we went over Thanksgiving on the exclusive podcast. But what did you do else this weekend?
I did something weird last night.
Some weird, wacky stuff?
Played Halo Infinite. You're
into Halo?
Not really.
Shocking.
The only Halo I've ever really played was... So, I have a weird history with Halo. When it came out and everyone loved it, I was still like, man, consoles.
You date for a few months? Yeah, weird breakup? You have a history?
We had a weird...
You had a tryst?
We had a weird relationship. So I was still like, man, console first-person shooters. I don't want to deal with this. I don't like it. PC.
PC snob.
Yep.
Yeah.
I never owned an Xbox, so I never really played it. I ended up getting Part 3 when I had a 360. And
360!
Enjoyed playing online, but I was miserable at it. But what I liked about it was just that I didn't really care about the campaign, but I liked that the online, they know that they have a huge online player base, and more so than really any other online shooter I've seen, really gives you the nuts and bolts options to make custom games and stuff like that.
Okay.
More so than I feel like something like Call of Duty does.
Call of Duty does give you a lot of in-game options.
In terms of limiting your weapons and things like that. And granted, my interaction with Call of Duty is fairly old at this point, too. We're talking Call of Duty 4.
Okay.
Part number 4 was the last one I played. But Halo Infinite came out, and it's free. The online multiplayer is 100% free. They will charge for the campaign mode when that comes out, which I think is early December. But all of the online is free, which is huge. It's not even like just Call of Duty does, where they give you the Battle Royale mode. Halo gives you everything. It's all there. You can do like the season pass stuff if you want to like get costumes and whatever. But what they give you for no money seems extremely full featured. I think that's kind of like my big takeaway from it. It's just how nice it is. Like, it's just a quality experience in a world where we constantly get like these shitty half-baked releases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess you could say this is because it was originally supposed to launch with the campaign, but like everything just feels right in this. It's easy to maneuver. It's easy to get in and out of games. I really like the feel of it. It just feels like a professionally done product, which I guess in this day and age is getting, when you have stuff like the Grand Theft Auto trilogy coming out,
sure,
and Cyberpunk, it's interesting to see something that launched and hasn't had a whole lot of issues since launch. I think they realized that they really needed to make a good impression with this, though. Well, I mean, it's their flagship franchise.
Yeah, it's their flagship thing at Microsoft, so it makes sense.
But yeah, no, that was fun. And I played for a bit. I'm not good. Best kill death ratio was 4-12. So real bad.
3-1. But opposite, 1-3.
Yeah, 1-3.
Kill to death.
Yeah, one kill for every.
You want it to be at least 1-1.
I know, that's what you're aiming for.
You're aiming for, that's probably the average, I would guess, 1-1.
That's what you want. So, yeah, how about you?
I went to Comic-Con.
Yeah, so did Vonnie.
And I totally forgot there was Comic-Con until like Thanksgiving night. I'm like, I think there's Comic-Con this weekend. I was like, I think there's Comic-Con. And there was this, we call it the special edition. Only 3 days. I went there Saturday at 2:30, and I left at 5:30, 3 hours. You honestly could have walked through everything in about two to two and a half at a leisurely pace. Still a big convention.
Right.
Halls B through E was the size of this. That's about 60% of the size it usually is, roughly. And that doesn't include the fact that you know, they were the rows were a lot less condensed.
Sure.
So when you factor that in, it was probably less than half of what it usually is. I went there, got, you know, it's a smaller convention when you can take your Lyft or Uber up to the convention center, not right. usually stopped at the Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah.
You know, a half mile away, you get to the convention center. And I was like, wow, okay. Then obviously you have the barrier there. But like, it was interesting because like people were cosplaying, but not as much. People were walking around and it's like, this is still a sizable convention, but you know, it's different. You know, this is smaller. It's, you're not bumping into people constantly walking around, for example, things like that. You had to walk all the way to freaking at the end at Hall H in order to, you had to get show your vaccination card or proof of test within 72, negative test within 72 hours, one or the other. You got a wristband. You walked in. It was funny. Like the huge ass Hall H was used. Hall H and F.
It's literally what G. everyone who I've talked to has said, that it was just weird to see Hall H reduced to like badging and ticketing,
but it was gigantic. Right. Why, there was no one there. Like I had to walk, like follow the blue line. It was like, it was Hall, I think G and H they used for it. It was a gigantic space with like 100 people in this like gigantic, like not even 100 people. Followed the blue line. It took like 3 minutes to walk the blue line to get to the, like where you pick up your professional pass. And I did it. And then, you know, you got your hand sanitizer, which is a nice little spray thing. You got your, they still printed the book. You got a bag and you walked for, it was weird, weird. You walked from Hall H into the end at the Artist Alley. That's how you got in this year. And, I liked the fact that it was smaller. I talked to someone who said this is how Comic-Con was 20 years ago.
That's what Vonnie said. Vonnie said she had a lot of fun because it reminded her of when she started going in the late 90s and like you literally walked up, bought your ticket, and wrote your name on the badge.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny because that kind of things like, oh, you can write your name on the badge. I did it this year. So you can get a Sharpie and do it. I didn't do that. Some people did. I was like, oh, this is like a throwback.
No, Vonnie did, and she tickled her pink. She was so happy about that.
It wasn't like in past years, they're like chipped, encoded like cards you can't counterfeit. Like these are just plastic, just go. Like they don't care. So I like talking to some of the artists and look at the pins and things. Like, enamel pins was the thing this year. Like everyone had the enamel pins. There might be an enamel pin bubble burst at some point, but like everyone had pins. So they're, you know, they're cute and they're cheap. You had like three or four enamel pin vendors that just had, I mean,
I definitely don't have three cork hundreds full of them.
Maybe thousands of different enamel pins. You didn't have a lot of big corporate ones. The only one that was kind of corporate that was big was my friend Pearl from Namco Bandai. They had a Pac-Man booth.
Yep, the Pac-Man booth was, Vonnie said she loved it.
That seemed like the normal booth.
She brought me back the exclusive like Nano Blocks Pac-Man set.
I don't know why I didn't buy that.
The translucent one.
I looked at the case, like, that looks pretty cool.
You make the little arcade machine, you can make a little Pac-Man, the two ghosts and a cherry. I mean, that's getting a full release, but the convention exclusive was the translucent one.
All right. Well, Pearl, I got to hit her up for that, but anyway. But it was great. Pearl recognized me with my hair. I was like, you know, let's see if Pearl hears. They had some younger women demoing the new Pac-Man. What's the Pac-Man game that came out we talked about? The collection one that came out. So they were demoing that. I was like, where's Pearl? Pearl's always here. She looked at me like with her big eyes. She's like, and I was like, that's Pearl. I haven't seen Pearl in person in like at least a few years. And we talked for like 15, 20 minutes. She's doing great.
Good.
She's got a kid's like seven. I'm like, I said, like, it's not a baby. I'm like, you just have your kids. She's like, no, the kid's like seven. I'm like, what? We reminisced. We talked about a mutual friend. I won't get into right now. That we both had history with. And then, that was really the only booth that like, was like, this is like a regular booth. Diamond Distributors wasn't there. Mile High wasn't there. Funko Pop was there. They were in Hall A. They were all of Hall A.
Mile High wasn't at the last one either.
Oh, they weren't?
Mile High fell out with them and they're gone.
Oh, there was only one of these silver/gold age vendor that I recognized by name. I saw names like, okay, I recognize that one. That was it. There was only the one major one. There were quarter booths that were unoccupied or missing. Like they had the name of the exhibitor up. They weren't there. There were tables with vendors out there. I could have set up books at someone. There was, I mean, a few dozen empty tables or quarter booths there. I was like shocked. They're probably like, you know what? I'm not want to do it anymore. But vendors are saying they were selling because there was less vendors, so more people were spending money. I wanted to buy, someone had a crocheted Loki alligator from the show, and they were sold out. I said, my friend, it's a Loki. I want that. Like, it's sold out. I said, like, I got their car. I'll order it. They had a giant one, though. They had a big one for $150. I said, where's that? Like, the little one. They're like, they're sold out. I'm like, fuck. So I bought things for friends there. I didn't buy anything for myself. I met a local children's author. She was very nice. She got her books printed in San Diego. And I think she said she might get a deal going. So I met a couple of authors. I got recognized by an author, another children's author, recognized my hair, tracked me down. I talked to him, a super nice guy. So yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It felt weird though, Ian. It was subdued. It felt like a pandemic. It felt like this is the Comic-Con you'd have if like 40% of the world passed away. Like if it felt like that. Like, wow, we're still here, but it's not what it was.
Right.
So hopefully by next, I don't know about this Omicron fucking variant gonna ruin things, but hopefully
Perseate.
Hopefully by next summer it's back to normal. But who knows? We may not have normal for a few years. South Park's new special is the post-COVID special where, you know, Stan and Kyle are like 40. So like that's, it's like they're older. So we'll see. We'll see, Ian.
We will. What else we got going on here? Fan group reversing engineers Ocarina of Time code.
Yeah, go for it, Ian.
I can't say anything. So Zelda 64 has been fully decompiled, potentially. I meant I'm stumbling over my words. Opening the door for mods and ports. That's what VGC says. So, what this means is like, basically, you know how there's that PC version of the, Mario a few 64. Years ago of Mario 64.
Was that due to the Giga Leak? Was that part of the Giga Leak?
I actually have no idea.
Okay.
So this will be interesting. This means that anyone who has got this source code who puts the work in can conceivably do a PC port like that and get it playing in, you know, very high resolution. They can do all of that, you know, modern upscaling and whatnot to it. So would be interesting to see. Maybe it'll be the version I play, the one that's not officially by Nintendo.
This says this kind of reverse engineering is legal because the fans involved did not use any leaked content. Oh, okay. They did not use any leaked content. They just reverse engineered it into parsable C code. Wow.
Oh, wow.
That sounds like a nice time doing that. My God, 2 years. A team effort, 2 years. That's cool, though.
Yeah. They didn't think they'd be able to match every function completely, but they did. They said dozens of people helped on the project.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, at least Nintendo's not going to hopefully do anything. Knock on wood, it's out there, though. So that's fantastic. Now you're gonna see like a PC version. You'll see the 4K version.
So yeah, they're hoping that they said they're working on the Master Quest debug version. So that would be interesting too.
What's interesting is that AMC is going to ruin my Spider-Man No Way Home experience by offering NFTs to people who pre-order tickets with Sony. So Sony is partnering here. So I don't know what the fuck they're thinking. So they're going to have 86,000 NFTs, non-fungible tokens, to members of its AMC Stubs Premiere, AMC Stubs A-List, and AMC Investor Connect who order tickets for No Way Home. Can we fucking stop with this? Can we stop with the NFTs? I read an article the other day about how the values plummeted on it overcrashed on everything but like the top 1% or whatever NFTs. Like it's done. It's fucking done.
I did something last night. I could not sleep. I did something that I did not need to do. I did not need to rile myself up. And I started doom scrolling NFT shit on Twitter, and it's just a really, man, I don't mean to sound mean. It's just a really sad scene. And like, there's people who are talking about blue chip NFTs and diamond level NFTs and gold chip NFTs. And
like fucking stocks.
Yeah, this has been around for like 6 months, and people just these guys got into it and they immediately threw all this like fucking false importance on it too. Like they want to play with the big boys. They want to think they're the big boys.
They want to turn it into like crypto. They want to turn it into like this is something everyone's going to get into. And it's like, yeah, you tried for a few months. Remember I told you the NBA fucking show early in the year was pushing their NFTs. I couldn't believe it on ESPN.
I think they still have them, but they're not advertising.
They are advertising. I was like, what the fuck are they doing? They're advertising. Oh, this is going to go up. They got an NBA player, you know, I don't call him a bench warmer. I never heard him, but he's like, yeah, I got this one and this one's worth $5,000. I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about? This is going to crash. I said within like end of the summer, and it happened like in 2 months. It happened in like 2 months. Okay, it's done already.
It's fucking trading cards for people with too much time on their hands.
But it's non-physical.
I know. I know.
So yeah, people are just trying to justify, oh, this is a blue chipper.
It's insane.
Fuck off with the NFTs is what I'm saying. Yes. Fuck off.
Please. Please.
We're already dealing with the crypto shit. NFTs is a bridge too far for even anything. A lot of people are like, okay, well, crypto is weird, but all right, at least it's a fucking thing that holds value. NFT holds my junk.
You can get NFTs at ultimatenintendo.com. New fun times. That's what they are. Get yourself some new fun times at ultimatenintendo.com.
What do I got there, Ian?
Oh, books, stickers, so many stickers.
Enamel pins.
Enamel pins.
Do I have a sale going on right now?
I believe you have a Cyber Week sale happening.
It's not a week, Ian. It ends December 1st. Use code TURKEYHANGOVER, which
Turkey
I did
hangover.
Have. TURKEYHANGOVER will save you 15% off everything on the site, the Not For Resale Blu-ray, the Video Game Years DVDs, the t-shirts, everything. 15% off the Turkey Hangover until December
1st. Why, sir, that's tomorrow. So for those of you at home listening,
well, that's why
you just got a few scant minutes to get your deals.
You got 36 hours. You can do it. And this is why you got to follow me on Twitter at Pat the NES Punk. I'm also going to be on Twitch Wednesday night, twitch.tv/contrycode, and on Cameo, cameo.com/PatContry. And I'm going to be in Sacramento, Spider-Man No Way Home weekend, the 18th and 19th at the Sac Gamers Expo. Come out and see me.
Yeah. Yeah. Go see Patty.
You want to talk about that McDonald's DSi resurfacing?
So an extremely rare McDonald's DSi was...
Why is this highlighted?
Was found again. So...
Now you're loud again. I keep trying to modulate you. Go ahead.
I don't know what you're doing. Okay.
Because you're yelling now again.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm an excitable guy. There's a McDonald's DS that was released in Japan. It has the McDonald's. It's a black DS with it's like a matte DSi with like a shiny McDonald's
logo
the arch on it. And it,
the cholesterol arches.
And it was used for training purposes. That's all I really know about it. But I think there's only 5 of them known to be in existence. And then there's, I know there's at least 2 programs.
There's 3, according to this.
Oh, okay.
Is there 3? Yeah, there's 3. No, there's 2. Smart 2.0 and the ECDP. So these were used in Japan to train?
Yeah.
It looks like.
They're interactive guides on how to be the ultimate McDonald's employee. This is coming from the Retro Dodo article. They covered everything from how to cook the food on the menu to how to serve the items to the customers.
That's great.
And you would, make the food virtually and show it to someone. So I actually have a rough idea as to what this is probably like. If you've ever worked at a chain restaurant, they have these tests that they don't really actually give. I mean, they give to people they think need them, but they're like, they'll show you a plate of food. They'll show you a menu, and they'll show you how all this food comes out, and you'll read something, and then they'll give you a plate, and they'll give you literally little magnets or color forms, and you've got to put the plate of food together.
So you're not using real food, you're practicing,
right, though. But you're showing them how you would plate the food, because if, especially at chain restaurants, it's hammer into you. Do it the same way every time,
of course,
with no variance.
It has to be uniform.
That's what you're looking for when you're going to a chain restaurant.
Big fan of plating.
So I feel like this is probably a similar thing, only it probably uses the DS touchscreen. You're probably dragging and dropping items to, make burgers and then show to the person who's going to hire you.
Mm-hmm, burgers.
So... yeah, they never meant to leave McDonald's stores. Some did. Very expensive. Yeah, here it says again, it's only 5 are doing the rounds on the internet. So 5 have been discovered. I would expect that there's more, but probably not a lot more.
I mean, you have to. You probably had the store manager would have them. And what would they do with them? Would they throw them out or give them back to the McDonald's corporate? Who would own them?
Return them. And I guarantee you, not every McDonald's got one of these. That's.
I mean, how many in Japan would use it? How many McDonald's were in Japan 15 years ago? Whenever the DSi?
Yeah, probably a lot.
I don't know. I don't know.
But who knows? So I think it's interesting. And I mean, I don't. The DSi is, I mean, neat because it's weirdly branded, but it's kind of boring looking. It's just matte black and shiny and glossy black. But I would like to mess with those programs.
How many McDonald's are in Japan? 3,700.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I guess the cities, they're not going to find them in the countryside, probably. 37, I would not have guessed that many. I would have said maybe 500.
My understanding is McDonald's is everywhere. That's
the big thing?
It's
3,700, we're ruining Japan, too, with our awful food. It's probably better quality there. I have to imagine it's fucking better quality.
It's a different menu, slightly.
Yeah.
There's different things. I don't know if it's better quality. It's McDonald's.
It has to be. It's sourced differently. It's better. They don't have the pink slime burger in Japan. They wouldn't get away with that.
Yes, I think they would.
Really? You think there's a higher quality of food standards in Japan versus here for what they can get away with? We're on the bottom of the fucking totem pole when
it comes to... Fast food is fast food. That's what people want.
No. That's not true, Ian. I went to Norway. It was a different experience. It's like they treat fast food differently. It's more expensive.
Sure, you can treat it that way if it's your own chain, but if it's a national worldwide chain, it's going to be pretty much the same everywhere.
I'm talking about McDonald's. It's different. The food's sourced locally wherever you are. Norway doesn't have pink slime burgers. It's probably better quality.
All right. I feel like that's wishful thinking.
They're not putting all the pink slime burgers from the U.S. on a cargo ship and going to Zimbabwe with them.
All right.
Think they're doing that?
They must magically have high-quality burgers at the McDonald's in Japan.
I'm saying the quality's going to be different because they probably have cows there that are like traditional burgers. All right, we're going to get off this topic. I'm getting into a fucking McDonald's argument with you. I thought you were just going to agree with me, Ian. I think you're a contrarian on purpose.
I don't think McDonald's is magically better anywhere else.
You think that the McDonald's burgers are the same in San Diego as in Moscow, as in Tokyo? They're exactly the same.
Comparably similar.
Well, I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy, Ian.
I think I love you. What am I so afraid of?
This might end the podcast, this argument. This is going to do it.
Pat, tell me about Moby Games and Atari.
Atari SA out in France, the husk of a shell of what was Atari, you know, Atari Games and Atari in the 70s and 80s. They are going to buy the massive game database Moby Games, the most famous game database out there. Very thorough. Obviously, we've used it to double check things for the certain guidebooks. There's screenshots there. You get dev information. What's interesting about Moby Games is cross referencing. So you click on like, oh, this company, you'll see, oh, this is what they worked on. So it's very user friendly. Moby Games. It's very user friendly.
Sure.
So when it was announced that Atari's gonna fucking buy it, that's like the biggest alarm bells that can go off or something like this, because there's no reason on the surface why Atari would want to buy a game database site. And it's scary to think about what they would want to do with it. It's almost like they want to do something and pivot their business. Obviously, they have these Atari cart games coming out. That was a minor debacle in terms of marketing them. But it doesn't have everything. I found some games that aren't on there, but I mean, it's as complete you're going to get for a game database. 300,000 unique titles.
Yeah. This is kind of 3,000. That's it.
300,000.
Okay. I thought you said three. I was like,
300.
What happened? That's like PS2 and maybe the Wii.
Yeah.
This is the problem with, you know, having one of these databases that's corporately owned. It can be sold off and
willy-nilly.
It's been in bad financial shape, I guess, for the past few years. I haven't paid very much attention to it, but Moby Games is something that I'm looking at least a few times a month just by the nature of what I do. Something is going to be linked to Moby Games that I want to check out or look at. And I feel bad for all the volunteers who have put their time and effort into it. You know, makes you think about compensation, or at least who you volunteer your time to, and being, I think, a bit more careful about that.
Well, yeah, because a lot of it's volunteer work.
No, it's from what I read, it's pretty much entirely volunteer work.
So this is why this is scary, because we just saw this happen with Go, the owner of Go Collect, you know, one of the guys that was buddy and involved with WADA. He buys Nintendo Age. That was like what, like 3 years ago at this point,
right?
He buys Nintendo Age. I'm gonna keep the forum open. He bought the database. That was a big thing about the database on Nintendo Age. It had most of the Nintendo consoles, if not all of them. It also had Sega Age and PlayStation Age, which weren't as big as Nintendo Age, but you had that one of the earlier databases, and there was, you know, cart scans, manual scans on there.
It's like the first place I remember going for manual scans and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what happens? This piece of work buys it, says he's going to keep it open, lies, shuts it down, and then basically, because information is knowledge, information is valuable. It's knowledge and it's valuable. All that information can be very useful on the forums. All the discussion about things are going back 15 years, and then all the photos, all the information, all the that's valuable, that information.
Right.
And then shutting it off from the rest of the world, just like that. That's what I'm afraid would happen here. My only thought is, you know how the guy, why he did it, because he's into buying and selling these games and runs an auction site, part of it. But why is Atari getting into this business?
Yeah, I have no idea. I can't think of anything. I mean, on one hand, they've just been absolutely fucking chaotic. Like, if you want to go by D&D alignment, they are chaotic neutral. Like, they are just... They just do shit. Fucking hotels. Let's start a cryptocurrency. Make the hats.
They did the NFT speaker hats. The watch that didn't come out. I mean, they didn't make these themselves.
Oh, they did the NFTs.
They were licensing these products, but like the watch never came out. Whoever they licensed that.
I mean, it's manic. It's crazy. It's
these remastered games all look good. This Asteroids one coming out looks fancy. I don't know if
I was looking into the dev a little bit. I've been actually looking into those a lot for various reasons, and
that should be their business.
Yes,
remaking the classics, Asteroids, high quality.
I think the Asteroids one looks probably the best of the three that have come out so far.
But that's what they should be doing.
Yeah,
remake Centipede. Go for it. Remake some of your IPs.
Is that Asteroids out yet?
No, but I looked at it, like that looks fancy. Get a spread gun attack. I'm like, that's brilliant for Asteroids. I thought you peaked on the N64 version.
You really like that version, don't you?
On the N64?
Yeah.
It's fun as hell. Give it a good rating in an upcoming guidebook. So that's the point. That's what their business should be.
December 14th is when that comes out. All right. Yeah, I'll probably play that.
I'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Asteroids is one of my favorite OG games. I love the vector graphics style. I love everything on it. Anyway, so the point is that I'm fucking scared that they're going to shut down Mobi Games. I'm just scared.
Yeah, no, me too. I think we all are, and we all should be a little nervous about what the fuck's going to happen.
So hopefully someone backs up the site and like fucking mirrors it at some point or continues on. Like, that would be great. But they're also going to invest in AntStream. They're going to make an investment and be a partner. Because AntStream was a streaming service that we talked about out of Europe where, you know, you pay a monthly. It's like a Netflix sort of style where you can play games, you know, from the cloud. And that's interesting because they were on the Atari VCS that came out. That was one of the things you could have purchased as an app to play. So that kind of makes more sense to get into that. But, you know, I guess we'll see if that's going to help AntStream, but they're going to buying Mobi Games for $1.5 million. That's going to be, that's what's scarier.
Yeah.
So. You know what's also scary?
I don't have anything clever to say here. The Amico is now in formal production.
That's the claim, right?
That's the claim.
So this email was sent out. When was this email sent? The timing was suspect. Tuesday the 23rd.
It was suspect. And why was it? It was like right after after Analog said that everything was, it was coming out on time. That's it.
Right when Analog dropped a bomb on us and said, hey, guess what? This Analog will be shipping, December 13th is when it's shipping?
Yeah.
Analog Pocket. Right after that, I guess, good old Tommy Talarico was like, you know what? I can't be the only company in town not coming out with a console since all the rest are shipping at some point. Or are in a cargo container ready to be unloaded, like the Evercade VS. Like, I guess Tommy had to say, you know what? This is what they're saying. Saving the best for last. News for last. The entire team at Intellivision is excited to announce that we've completed our pre-production and started our formal production of Amico consoles. We are focusing on our initial launch units that will ship to our first customers as soon as possible. We hope to have more accurate shipping information by the end of the year.
So two things. One, obviously, that's a not so clever, basically confirmation that you're not getting this by Christmas.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, but he's never come out and said that's not happening. By cleverly wording it to, we'll have more shipping information by the end of the year, that's clearly saying, stop thinking about Christmas. But there are people on Atari Age that are still insisting that they're going to get it by Christmas.
Well, they
believe in Tommy.
They can be there crying on Christmas morning.
Terrence Talamanca.
So this is what's so funny about this. This is another splicing of words. This isn't like they're already on a production line somewhere in China putting together these consoles.
No, they're not being manufactured. Production, I guess, does not mean manufacturing production, in this instance.
Production probably means we're starting to accrue the parts to eventually put this thing together.
Right.
We're starting to maybe get the parts made to put this thing together. That does not mean that they are ready to slap these consoles together on a production line.
I saw someone state, and I It was funny, but it made me think of it. What if it's like the Halcyon? What if they mean like they're just like, what if production of them means they're making boxes and it's like the Halcyon where there's like a warehouse full of fucking boxes for a system there's 10 units of?
we talk about how Tommy showed off, how ridiculous he showed off. Oh, here's the Amico AC adapter with, you know, with the printed logo on it. Like that could be meaning, wow, they're getting AC adapters made. It's in production officially. Like, that's what it could mean. And what's so telling is, again, the timing, it was right after, like a day after, I believe, Analog said,
hey, this is coming out. Shipping. So the three things that we were all looking forward to in December, the Playdate, the Analog Pocket, and the Steam Deck, were either delayed or confirmed. So that left... I mean, if you want...
Playdate was going to come out, but it had bad batteries.
Well, right. Yeah. But I'm just saying, they were delayed it was confirmed for December. Yeah. Which meant that of all the projects that have any sort of name behind them at this point, there was only one that still needed to tell people what the fuck was going on.
Sure.
And it was Amico. So they obviously, I think, felt some fire at
that
point.
Tells me the Steam Deck's definitely coming out. Something tells me that.
Oh, no, I didn't say it's not. I'm just saying.
That's a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Steam Deck's going to come out. Hell or high water.
Right, but...
You know.
If you pretend that all things are equal, it was still time for the Amico to make a statement.
Sure, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because they're going to say at the end of the year that... They're going to say... This is what it's going to happen. They're going to say quarter one, maybe, which gives you until March 31st or 30th. March, whatever the last day of March is, it gives you 90 more days. And it's like, then they'll probably say, all right, we'll have a new update in quarter one.
They can't possibly hold on to this.
This is what we need.
This is such a slow device.
As much as we gave Atari shit for the VCS, they went over to China and showed the workers putting the fucking things together.
Yeah,
they went overboard in sharing with like, here's the micrometer we're using to see the casings off. That was too much information.
They overdid it, but
I appreciate them going that direction versus this. That was transparency, Tommy. This is not transparent. Atari was transparent. They showed them on a pallet, you know, taped up, ready to get shipped over. And still people were questioning it because at that point it was delayed forever. But that's the evidence we need that it's in manufacturing. I want to see people putting together in China on a line. I want that. Then I'll say it's in production. Double production. And what's even more telling,
double plus production.
This isn't a full topic, but God, I could have made it one. The poor Republic investors, they don't know about the physical products, Tommy. They also don't know that it's in production. There has been an update to them in 2 months. September 30th was the last update to the poor investors. I give you millions of dollars, and they can't get an update from the CEO. How sad is that?
We still ask like naive things like, oh, can we expect to see returns on our shares?
When we start getting money back on our investment? Yeah.
You don't ever.
Well, they might at some point, but not for the physical products. And no one ever said I was wrong about that, by the way, which means I guess we were right about that physical products.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things where, like, if that was not true,
we would have said that.
Tommy would have been very clear about that. Yeah. Because I feel like that's
very... They would have said, like, oh, you're messing with the SEC now, like those threats. And it's like, we didn't hear anything about that.
Yeah.
So we had that fucking nailed when it comes to that.
Just real quick, Astro Smash was Astro Smash. That's literally all I have to say about Astro Smash. It was the same game we've been seeing.
Another.
They did another deep dive.
And another 10-minute game. There's 10 levels.
10 levels.
There's 10 levels.
That just seems like the cutoff for Tommy. 10. Because 10 in skiing, 10 in Astro Smash, like Move 18 Patrol. Overhead levels.
Maybe Move Patrol, maybe you get 20 in Move Patrol. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian,
yeah,
there was an announcement from Polymega, which was released. It's the modular retro emulation based console.
Ooh, so
it's the disc based unit. Remember, and you buy the modules to play Genesis, Super Nintendo, TurboGrafx, and NES. Right, those are the modules for it.
So this is interesting and concerning for a number of reasons for me. So the Polymega finally released. By all accounts, it does what it said it was going to do the third or fourth time it told you what it was going to do. And people have it. So congratulations.
Damning with faint praise, yeah. Ian.
So congratulations, people have it. I understand that there are people for whom money is no object, and if you want a fancy emulation device, I still do think that the capabilities of the emulation of the disc-based stuff is pretty neat. Just not $450 neat.
Yeah.
Never, ever.
Never. Went from $300 right. up to like four. Is it $450 now?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Never, ever, ever.
People what, like the Saturn
what
stuff.
What I spend it. For this amount of money. But they got it out, which is good. I mean, it's really, we're really like putting distance between all the others and Intellivision. Like Intellivision's really just running out of excuses.
Pandemic and chip shortage.
So I honestly thought they were going to release the Polymega and fold it up. They have not.
They're going forward.
They're going forward. They have announced the EM05 Ultra element. Oh. Which will be an emulation-based Nintendo 64 module.
Just to let you know the price on this, if you get the base unit and all four bundles, it'll cost you $765. It's on sale right now for $650, free ad, but normally $765, and I'm guessing that does not include shipping and tax. So you're looking probably over $800. $800. So this is not an affordable sort of option.
It's fucking nuts, man. Just learn how to do this shit on a laptop.
Hell, I'll recommend a Mister at that
just
point.
Just do a Mister at that point.
Because again, this is not FPGA, remember. Right.
So,
or buy the great analog products.
They have mentioned, or they have announced a 64 unit. I have two main issues here. One, how long and when? Because you haven't, I don't think customers are necessarily feeling particularly, that's what I'm looking for, faithful. In this, I don't know. I mean, it took so long for the other thing, the original modules and the system base system to come out. How long is this going to take to come out? I think you got some atoning to do. Two, it's the N64. I need to. They're going for 90% compatibility.
Good fucking luck.
Good luck.
As I've talked about before, and people came after me, it's like, why did you do that? I've just went through the hell. Trying to get screenshots and accuracy for that looked like the 90s for 400 games. N64 emulation is the fucking pits. It's the pits.
Right.
And it's not going to get close to 100% anytime soon. That's the problem with this.
And the reason why Polymega works that I'll even admit to, the reason why I don't like completely just damn them, is there is a market for this. People like this sort of stuff. They want the easy drop it in and go market. So why is Polymega successful? Well, you don't have to tinker with your emulators and stuff. You put in your Saturn discs and they play. You put in, what other disc systems does it do?
Turbo CD,
Sega PlayStation. CD, PlayStation.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you just put them in and off you go. N64 is not going to, I don't see an emulation. There's a reason why Hyperkin didn't put theirs out. Hyperkin will put out an HD version of any fucking thing they can, and sometimes even in not great of shape. If Hyperkin did not shit out a low quality N64 HD console, there's a reason, and it's because the technology is not there. It's going to be a nightmare.
Thank you, Ian.
There it is.
Remember they initially announced that there was some weird photo of one at one event like 3.5 years ago?
Yeah.
And what did we say? That's not coming out anytime soon.
And it didn't.
Because they realized we can't just take emulators and make this work. You can't take one. This is the issue with the emulation. Emulation on the N64 has never gone for accuracy. It went to make sure games could run quickly on whatever hardware that existed that could run it. So they always focus on the more popular games, but not accuracy, especially in how they look. How they looked is not accurate at all. They look like late 90s PC games with all the different, like using DirectX and Glide and things like that.
Right. That's, it looks more like something more akin
to PC ports.
Yeah, right.
So you're not getting accuracy. But the other problem is there was so much we've learned, weird, like low-level programming and hacks that the devs themselves had to do to get shit out of these games, like in Rogue Squadron, in order to get like the very crisp and clear audio effects like that. They had to like come up with tricks because it was so hard to fucking develop for the N64 in general. There's so many limitations. So, in the journey of doing, trying to help out the writers in terms of the book, in terms of even to play these games semi-accurately, we had to do workarounds and use at least three emulators, Project 64, MuPin, and I forget what the third one and RetroArch that was used, because there was not a one-size-fits-all solution to this emulation. There is not. You can play with one emulator and the game runs like crap, and another one, it might be better. You have to use different plugins to get it to work, probably different audio plugins that won't work with some games, that work with others, video ones. It's a nightmare if you're going for 100% or even close to it. We're not even talking about the game accuracy and how they look. In order to emulate an N64 game to look like it looked on the hardware, you need a graphics card usually to do it. You need a powerful graphics card to run it with a stable frame rate. On my computer, I couldn't even run Rogue Squadron at a stable frame rate. And my graphics card's not that old. So, of course, you say, well, Pat, I can do with this. That's the point. So for them to do this, Ian, this is what they're going to have to do. This thing's going to have to use multiple different types of emulators. They're going to have different like configuration settings and plugin settings for each individual game. This is going to be a nightmare, potentially, for them to figure this out. Forget about looking accurate. That's not happening. I'm telling you right now, there, that's going to be tough unless they come up with their own their own custom overlay to kind of make it look, you know, the muddy overlay in order to like, so the jaggedy stuff gets round. You know what I mean? Like, sure, things like that. They're going to have to do some work here, I think. But people are going to go into this thinking this is going to be, oh, this is just like I played in the 90s. It ain't going to be that. It's not.
Right.
I'm not even getting into multiplayer and things like that, and how some games you might have larger issues with computation power and emulators with multiplayer and things like that.
Yeah,
like,
that's a good point. I did. I feel like the only way they could do this is the N64 library is, I guess, small enough that you go through and you just have it. I mean, you'd have to recognize every game that gets put in and then do special configurations
exactly
for every single one.
I'm saying that's what they're going to do. They're going to go through all 400 games. They're going to have to trial and error, do different plugins. I don't know if how many of those plugins available. Like, for example, Project 64 has something called the Angry Lion plugin that is one of the ones you have to use in order to have it look like the hardware, but you need a graphics card in order to run it, like a powerful graphics card. I don't know if any of these plugins are like, you can throw this on commercial products or not. I have no idea what the legality of this is.
Oh, sure.
In this interview with our favorite site now, Nintendo Life, it was basically asked that, and they said it'll employ the best legal solution we can provide while hitting the same minimum 90% compatibility requirement we have for our CD BIOS solutions and other supported game systems. Their goal is to hit 90%. Their goal. They may end up with, like, say, 75%. So you'll be like, hey, Pat, I don't care. I want to play Ocarina. And you'll be like, okay, fine. What if you want, you pick a random game and throw it in, you're going to have issues. Pick a random game. I told about the issues I had playing fucking arcade compilation pack, you know, ROMs. I was playing Tapper at 3 frames a second because the emulator doesn't like that sort of game. It doesn't like that it's like emulating
within an emulator.
It doesn't know how to do it.
A little bit of,
I mean,
Inception sort of deal.
It's the worst console to emulate, the worst, I guess, of the, we'll just say the, you know, it's the worst probably, because that you can do GameCube and Wii fine. They have a Switch emulator because at that point it's a PC. N64 is the worst. It's the worst. I don't know about where's Jaguar at? That's probably a piece of shit too because of the architecture.
I would imagine that's got to be
a nightmare too, as well. But no one cares about Jaguar, so why bring it up?
Sure, you
know, unfortunately. Pat, I like the Jaguar. So we'll see what the cost is going to be on this as well. When it's, like you said, when it's going to come out. What does a module cost usually? I don't know. It's hard to keep
80,
track.
But I have a feeling that one will be much more.
They
expensive.
Used to be 60. They're now 80. Yeah.
And I don't think that I would be surprised if that holds the 80. If that holds 80. I think that's probably going to be 100 to 120 at least.
It will come with the Retrobit controller, which are nice controllers.
Yeah, those are really nice.
The Tribute 64 pad. Those are nice.
Big ups to Retrobit.
Retrobit.
Love those guys.
Yeah, get that. So that's going to be nice. They're obviously rebranded. They also have the light guns is still available. It was originally the Sinden.
That was
gun.
One of the other things that it interested me about it, but not enough to ever drop $450. Well, how much is that light gun?
$109.
Yeah,
I was going to guess like 60 or 80. So you're talking about $1,000. You're fast approaching after taxes and shipping. If you get the whole suite, I mean, it's like $1,000. It's like the rich person's emulation solution with carts. It's like that wedge of a consumer.
There's a certain set of people out there that this is the best thing they've ever fucking spent money on, and they're like, so happy with it. But it's a very specific group of people.
It's like the Amico problem. You're going to have to find that.
People who want physical hardware or physical software, but don't want the actual hardware.
But you're still not getting total accuracy because it's emulation.
Right.
So you're not going the FPGA route.
Really weird stuff, man.
All right. Anything else to add on that, Ian? That's kind of it was surprising just because of all the points we brought up before about how of a minefield the emulation is. And I don't think if people go into this expecting like, wow, the Saturn came out okay, or it's emulating NES or Super Nintendo, it's like, yeah, because those emulators are in a lot better shape than those scenes, you know.
Right, exactly.
Vuori is a new perspective on performance apparel. It's perfect if you're sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. I used to work out in sweats and floppy t-shirts. This is not Vuori. Vuori is everything designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. If you want to wear it all the time, you can, since it's comfortable. In fact, it might be more comfortable than what you're wearing right now. They're incredibly versatile, these clothes. Can be used for just about any activity. You want to go running, you want to train, you want to do some yoga, but you can lounge around, you can go run errands, you can go to the supermarket. It's perfect for all of that.
Yeah, who wants to keep track of different clothes for different things? With Vuori, you've got clothes for going out, working out, camping, whatever you'd like. Take, for instance, these men's ponto shorts. You can get cozy in them. They're the perfect lounge or work from home shorts, made with signature dream knit fabric, lightweight and smooth like butter. These shorts have a soft, stretchy material and are classic elastic waistband for an understated but overly comfortable everyday short. One short, but for every sport.
I got the platinum camo ponto short, Ian. I worked out with my resistance bands. I was like, you know what? I don't need to change out of this to go to the supermarket. I went right in there. I walked in with the ponto short looking good, and I got the Seaside hoodie. Could be my favorite. It's a classic zip-up hoodie with next-level comfort, and it's made with four-way stretch and a soft brushed fleece. It was created to accompany activity as well as adventure. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they're offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at vuoriclothing.com/CU podcast. That's VUORI clothing.com/CU podcast. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but you'll enjoy free shipping on any U.S. order over $75, and they have free returns. Go to VUORI clothing.com/CU podcast and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Ian, we have an update.
Update.
WADA just released their first population report.
They sure have.
WADA Games has been in hot water.
Hot water.
The past few months.
Check it and see.
We reported on it, Seth Abramson, Carl Jobst, about all the, we'll just say, improprieties between relationships between people at Heritage Auctions, having relationships with people, or being involved also with WADA Games, the grading company, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
And I think we'll have an update on that maybe next week. We'll see. But people were saying, for a long time, even Heritage Auctions was saying, hey, you guys should release population reports. There's no reason not to. The only people that weren't saying that were WADA Games, which was weird because it's like, why wouldn't you say that if you were just an impartial grader? But then you learned there's all relationship between people. And then you had the Jim Halpern stuff who...
WADA. I didn't know that Heritage Auctions even said that they should release.
They were quoted in an article.
Oh, okay.
After the Mario 64 thing blew up, they said...
I seem to forget they said that. That must have been what really...
I think Valerie said that. Nick Lakely said, like, it's a good idea to release these. And,
yeah.
And so you would ask yourself, hey, Pat, why would WADA hold this back? Well, because by not having population reports, people have to guess how rare these games actually are. They're willing to spend more money because they don't have knowledge.
Right, exactly. If they think it's the only one they're ever going to see, they're going to try a lot harder to get it than if there's 20 of them.
Or there's only three. You know, like... they try to claim that we don't want to put out something that's incomplete because it might skew something. It's like any information. There's almost no situation you can be in life where no information is better than at least a little information or partial.
Yeah,
like that's insane.
Right.
That's insane.
I can't think of any situation where that would be the case.
I want to guess at everything versus okay. I know 50% how to fix this air conditioning unit versus having no knowledge at all about how to do it. I just don't understand like how you can get away with that. But they did. Then they were sold off. They were sold off right after that auction. That was in the works. So here we are though with the release of a population report. Like I said before, Ian, the damage has been done with this. People have spent their money. You have people spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on games that are not rare and not even that rare in sealed form. That's a problem. So they released the first one, the NES population report, which is up to date as of a month ago for some reason. This couldn't be updated in the past week. You couldn't just copy and paste this in. This is a one-page sort of thing. You can filter. You can search. You can filter on, I believe, can you filter on name? Yeah, you can click name, game. It's a little drop-in database little functionality to a website. This is not, like I said, Ian, this is not like rocket science for them to have done this. You have a sealed tab, a complete inbox, incomplete sample tab with numbers we'll talk about, and you have your cart tab, which only has the NWC carts for some reason. So, all right, Ian, what is your initial takeaway here, if you have any on this?
Obviously, there's a lot of sealed games out there. My initial takeaway is just looking at certain things like Mario 3. Super Mario 3, I think there was 20 or 13. Where was that? Sorry. I'm looking at there's just all these numbers. Super Mario 3 has 10 9.8s.
237 total sealed.
237 total sealed.
137.
Nearly 40 in the 9.6 to 9.8 range. Have we seen any Super Mario Brothers go for insane prices right now?
I'll look it up as you talk. I'll look up Super Mario.
So
we have, but I'll look it up.
I think the next one is definitely going to go for far less than whatever. It depends on how quickly they're put back up.
Of course, I got to sign in to see it because I for some reason that's behind a wall. You know, not even eBay. You got to, I think, sign in to see past prices.
So I immediately wanted to check things like that. I wanted to check stuff like Super Mario Brothers. I've noticed that though there are some games like rare games, like Batman Return of the Joker is kind of a semi-rare game.
It's very uncommon.
Yeah, has 13 sealed copies at 9.8. It's pretty easy, I think, to look at these and see which ones likely came from
cartons.
Yeah, cases.
Cartons, cases.
Yeah, cases or cartons.
All right. You want to play Super Mario 3 real quick?
Go for it.
Okay. How many 9.4s are? Excuse me. How many 9.6s are there listed?
29, I believe.
9.6s have gone for $28,800 January of this year. That's not the most expensive one. But that's a Wright Bros too. Before you get on me, that's a Wright Bros. That's not even a first release. How many 9.4s are there?
9.4s. There are 43.
Well, one went for 12 fucking grand.
Yeah, not anymore.
There. So
I can't see that happening.
Here's the point. They are several months backlogged to grade these. So this list is just what they've completed graded. There's a lot more sitting around, and people have told me about that. We're like, they're sitting around still. And again, this isn't the whole universe of these games. It does not include the VGA ones and ones that people have. Like the person that picked up Mario 64 at Luna Video Games, two locations sealed, they're just sitting there on someone's shelf potentially.
Right.
This is what happens when you have collusion to push a market, and you have people with money also helping, but also some poor investors without any knowledge of what they're getting into this now. 28,800, Ian, you said there was like how many of the 9.6?
9.6, I think, was 29. Super Mario 3, 29 9.6s.
Yeah.
10 9.8s.
Yeah.
43 9.4s, 34 9.2s.
There's 157 sealed Super Mario Brothers. 157 of them in various grades.
7 of those at 9.8, 16 at 9.6. 9.8 is the real, real important one, but honestly, 9.6 is pretty important too. We've seen some 9.6s and even a few 9.4s, I think, go for kind of crazy prices.
Again, what was key is, again, yeah, once you get to even 9.4, 9.6 for sure, when you get to like, well, okay, these are probably pulled from a carton, you really start to see what's happening here with all of these. When you see there's like 16 of this specific, you know, Rev A, Wright Brothers Super Mario 3 at 9.6, like, and then there's 8 of the 9.8s for that. I'm like, yeah, people had cartons of them.
Oh, yeah. Friday the 13th, I think, is a perfect example. 29.6s, 29.8s.
Yeah.
And then 18 9.4s. And then you drop pretty quickly there to 11 9.2s, 11 9.0s. And then you've got, yeah, like 30 further down there. But like to see 20 in the 9.6s and 9.8s, the only way that's happening is if someone's... Well, opening cartons.
We could sort on the total on that arrow. We can do the top 10 most common sealed games.
Sure.
And it's not shocking when you realize these were popular games, which is what I get back to. These games are not rare, even sealed. Like, you can find them. Super Mario Brothers 3 is number. I'll do top 10 here. We'll start with this is the one that's a later one. It's Wario's Woods 57. That had been graded sealed. Wario's Woods was the last NES published game released. Came out in 94. You can find those aftermarket. Some people, I think, probably found them in Toys R Us's late 90s, early 2000s. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, 58 sealed. 58. 14 at 9.4. There's 8 above that. 4, 9.6, 4, 9.8. 50 fucking 8 of them. 60 Metroids.
None that are 9.8s. That's interesting.
So someone doesn't have a carton, you think? Maybe? There's okay. Final Fantasy, 64 of them. 80 Dr. Mario's. That's the one I want to check the prices up. Because that's one of those ones that probably got reprinted a lot. Or there was a... I mean, Dr. Mario's a common game.
Sure.
Borderline, very common. So I'm going to look up that. How many, Ian, how many 9.8s are there?
For which one?
For Dr. Mario,
7.
There's 7. All right. One went for 10 grand. That was a Game Boy one. Let's see, I can't even find a 9.8. Oh, some of these haven't come for sale yet. I can't find some. Oh yeah, okay, 9.8 went for 4,000. The next one after that went from 2,000 to 4,000. Okay, what's next on the list here?
Dragon Warrior,
the giveaway. The giveaway, 89 of them.
Makes sense. Only one 9.8. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has 7.
Has 99 total.
99 total. I'm looking at the 9.8s, but okay. 7 in the 9.8.
You said Friday 13th was surprising. That's someone that had a stash of them.
105 total. 40 of them are 9.6 or 9.8.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Zelda 2, I'm not surprised at. 106. I have one. Those are not hard to find sealed. 29.6, 5, 9.8. Super Mario 2, 117. Again, these are very common games. You shouldn't be shocked when you hear these numbers.
Right.
But again, they're not rare. Legend of Zelda, 128.
Interestingly, this one has a fairly low 9.8, and I wonder if that window on the box is something that gets damaged often.
You think so?
I'm just trying to figure out
there's something with the cellophane maybe with that?
Yeah, just trying to figure out why something that has 128 of them would only have 2 when, you know, it looks like for a lot of these, it's, you know, 5 or more.
And then Super Mario Brothers, the original, 157. Obviously, when you click on that, there's like 6 different versions of it. There's only one sealed hang tab, gloss sticker seal one, like first or second, gloss would be, is that second print? Is matte first print? Yeah, gloss is second print. Hang tab, there's 18 of them. So remember, the hang tab one is the fucking, that was the rally one that they end up selling for like $2 million.
Right.
There's 18 of them. 18 of them.
Yeah, only one at the 9.8, but still.
Okay, there's one 9.6, two 9.4s. There's 18 of them though. So the one was a 9.8 that sold for $2 million, was it? I don't think it was a 9.8.
I thought it was.
I'll look it up real quick.
I could be wrong. I do feel like it's worth pointing out that in the collector world, 9.6 and 9.8 is kind of what counts.
That's what you go for. Yeah. No, I get it. Let's see. In August 6th, it sold for... Why can't I find... These articles like hide this for some reason. They like make it hard for me to fucking see this, and it annoys me.
No tens whatsoever.
Well, tens kind of impossible.
So, yeah,
it's almost impossible for a comic, right?
Yeah,
they have 9.9s. Even they don't have.
I just think it's funny that yeah, I think 9.8 is pretty much the highest you can really expect out of most things.
So yeah, I mean, so do you have any questions about like does this tell you anything that you didn't know?
No, I think the more interesting stuff is the stuff at the bottom that has like one copy sealed.
That's the stuff that's actually rare.
That's the stuff. Yeah, exactly. That's
it was. I'm
super
sorry.
Hard to.
It
come
wasn't
by.
The 9.8 that went for $2 million. Okay, so there you go. It was the 9.8 hang tab.
Yeah, like someone's got all these Sachin games sealed, one each.
Oh, the Sachin games are there?
Yeah.
So the course of the question now remains, why are they drip feeding this out? Why can't we have everything all at once? Why can't we have the Atari one? Why can't we have the Super Nintendo one? You have the numbers out there.
I think they're scared of the
N64 one.
I think Mario 64 is, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but N64 is a much younger system than the NES. The likelihood of these numbers being much higher is only likely.
If there's 157 Super Mario Brothers sealed, how many fucking are there going to be of Mario 64?
And how many will there be after that one went for a million? That's the thing. I want to see what this population report looks like in a year.
We also have, there's a sample. There's very partial for complete inbox and also for cart. We'll talk about this. Interesting. 204 complete inbox Legend of Zelda. I mean, because everyone can send them in. We all have. I got complete inbox of the stuff laying around. I don't even know if I have probably, you know, almost 300 Super Mario 3s, almost 300 Super Mario Brothers. Of that, I just want to see. There's 48 sticker seals for Super Mario Brothers. Again, you can come across them. They're not impossible to find sticker seal Super Mario Brothers.
Sure.
You know, they only made them for like the first, you know, less than a year. And then we'll talk about the cart here. The cart has two listings here. And I'm going to assume these are real numbers. It says sample. I guess that means it's impartial, obviously. They only put down Nintendo World Championships gold and gray. They have...
Yeah, just a sample. Why they don't have all of it, but it's a sample of what they have. So
yeah, I don't know why. Again, they have the databases fucking pasted into your freaking website. Let's go. So
this is where something really weird comes out. 26 slabbed Nintendo World Championships cartridges.
Gray version.
Gray. Seems like everyone who got them just decided, hey, I'm going to slab this.
Well, not everyone.
No, but that's a really big chunk of people.
Pat math, that's like...
Which shows who has them in their hands right now.
That's like...
What kind of people.
That's like 35% Pat math. There's about 80, I think, verified to exist, something like that. So that's...
It's like 85, I think. 86.
So that's... it really shows you, again, like who's holding them, how many are real collectors versus like who just got these... How many of these people just got them in the past couple of years?
Right.
In order to try to flip them. Remember, there's only been a couple auctioned off. I think three have been auctioned off in Heritage Auctions, three gray ones. That's it. The first one went for like 26,000. The second one for the 180, and the third one went for like 80, whatever. Two 9.0s. I would love to see a 9.0 gray because I've never seen one in person.
Yeah.
Is there no glue marks on it? You know, like that's the thing. Once you get into these weird grades, like what the fuck's an 8.5 versus a 9? Gray NWC. Like I would love, and that's why I got into the arguments with the people at Wad. It's like, how do you grade these things when there's no 9.8s that ever existed, you know, of these? Like, how do you even have a scale?
Yeah, what are you comparing it to
at that point?
There was never a perfect. Yeah, it's weird.
11 less than 6.5, yes, because a lot of them, I mean, mine is probably, honestly, probably like a 7, between a 7 and 8, somewhere in that range. It's one of the better looking ones, but it's not perfect. It's not beat to hell. If that matters. And then this is the one that gives me, I don't know what to think about this, 4 out of the 13 or so gold ones I've been graded. So obviously that's 25%, a little more than 25%. I know of two of them, the one on eBay of the Pokemon seller that's trying to get 2 million or best offer. And I saw one in person at Too Many Games. That was gold. There's a 7.5, a 6.5, and two less than 6.5. I guess they don't want to put all the grades on the page for some reason. Like, who cares, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to think about that, Ian.
No, I don't either.
Obviously, when you got the golds, you probably have a lot more money because there's people that have grades that have had them for 20 years or 15 years that didn't spend a huge amount on them.
Right.
So maybe the gold is more like that's definitely people that are going to definitely flip them. But then again, 26 is a large amount too. It's a similar percentage to 4. 4 to 13 is like a similar percentage almost, just about. It's in the 30s range, a percentage.
Yeah, you're right.
So, will Pat be number 5? That's the sad thing, though, is because if you have to sell them in the future, you might have to get them graded. You might have to.
Yeah, at this point, it seems like that's where it's going.
But I would prefer to go through CGC if I went that route.
Sure.
And they start next year. All right, we're going to come back to this. Definitely whenever they slowly dribble out the N64 one, because that's going to be a big eye-opener, as well as the Atari 2600 one. That's going to be hysterical to go through the numbers with that.
I can't. I mean, the Atari 2600 one isn't going to move mountains or like be groundbreaking, but I really want to see how many Spider-Mans there are.
You want to make a bet? You want to make a bet? Price is Right rules can't go over or non-Price Right. We'll make a bet. How many Seal Spider-Mans have been graded?
How many Seal Spider-Mans total?
Yeah, have been graded. This will be fun. Non-Price is Right rules. I don't want to do like $1 on you.
45.
45 only? Okay, I'm going to say 100.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be, I think it's going to be closer to 200.
Actually. Yeah, I mean, how many, I'm playing real low. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of like the higher grade numbers. Oh, okay. In total?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, total.
In total?
Total. Yeah, let's do it.
I'll go 153.
Okay. I'm gonna go higher. I'm going to say 230.
Okay. All right.
We'll 153, 230?
Yeah. I think the possibility for it to be a comically large number is definitely
watch
there.
Watch it be like 580. And you're just like, hey, I'm not shocked that there's more than those that exist.
No, you couldn't tell me a number that would shock me with the Spider-Man, I don't think. Unless it was like really low.
Ian, we got a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go. You exchange some money. Chase the money, ghost the bunnies, and you get bonus podcast bits. You get the full video podcast. We do hangouts,
writing.
Got to do a writing soon, and we also do these fun little polls.
This one was close. I wish we got the sealed game one, just because it would have tied in nicely to the water population report. In second place, 48% are sealed game collectors being mistreated. Wink. The wink added a lot to that, 40%. And in first place, Ian, advice for retro gamers who want to stream, podcast, or make videos.
I think podcasting is one of those things where, and Pat may disagree with me here.
I disagree entirely.
I think people always want to like start doing a podcast and have a kind of a strict idea or of what the podcast is going to do with segments, you know, things like that they're going to try to do every week. I think trying to do segments every week is a really bad thing to do, personally, because you're never going to be able to fill all those segments out every week, and they always kind of...
So you're going into the specific terms of structure.
I would say something like that. I'm just talking about how I've managed to enjoy doing podcasts for this long, because I'm not the one who's really doing the marketing and stuff like that. But I think resisting a rigid structure is a good idea. Obviously, it's finding someone that you converse well with does not always mean trying to do a podcast with your best friend. You've got to find people that you can hold a conversation with, people who have a similar level of knowledge to you to hold that conversation, and someone who is more often than not going to probably agree with you in most ways, but not every way. Otherwise, it's going to be extremely boring. You don't ever want to do you don't want an echo chamber necessarily.
Sure. You don't want people jumping into their throats constantly either, but you don't want an echo chamber.
Right. Now I'm leaving it to you because you probably have a lot more worthwhile things to say than I do.
Ian, don't put yourself down, buddy. I mean, these are three different things. Podcasting is the easiest of the three. You just need recording equipment. You can buy a couple of decent USB mics for like, I don't know, even like nowadays, $35, $40. If you want to get a mixer, there's cheap mixers on Amazon that get the job done for like $30. You can buy the combo package for like $60 that you can under $100. You can do a podcast even with two people. You could do it definitely for one person.
Sure.
That's all you need. Then you buy your podcasting service to host it. There's free ones. Podbean has a free one that you don't get a lot of bandwidth. Like you can get it done. We'll say $150 if you really want to say it. But then you have to be disciplined. I mean, I've heard of a lot of podcasts or people that do podcasts, and you look and they just stop. So they don't even get a chance to even to breathe and get their name out there, because a podcast is the hardest thing to advertise. There's no algorithm for podcasts. It's not like YouTube. There's no recommendations.
Right.
It's nothing like that. It's not like SEO based. I don't think people.
Yeah, there's never really been like a search engine that where you like type in a topic and it pulls up podcasts like it would a YouTube video.
No, people hear podcasts by word of mouth, recommendations to friends. I guess you can spend advertising on a, I don't even know how social media, but like the podcast, when we did our podcast, it didn't pick up for like a year and a half at least. It took a bit. And that was with the YouTube audience to help it. It was I had 80,000 people on the channel before I started the podcast.
I will say one thing though, at the time that we started the podcast, I think fan bases were still more or less gravitating towards certain personalities on YouTube. Podcasts were still a somewhat podcasts were, I mean, they weren't new by any means, but
there wasn't a ton.
There wasn't a ton of them. Yeah.
It was still newish territory. They were like within, you know, 5 years old, roughly.
Yeah.
Terms like people doing. There wasn't a lot of popular ones at the time. We would make the top 20 on gaming podcasts. Yeah. We were doing it every other week. It was like IGN, Retronauts, GameSpot had one, a couple. It was mostly corporate ones besides like Retronauts, I believe, in ours. And you have to keep at it. I mean, heck, we've had people call in, say, hey, I got a podcast, and on our question, you know, on our Q&A line, and I checked their podcast and they were no longer doing it by the time I got to their question.
Yeah, it's not a thing that you can do like for 2 months and expect to gain a listener base. No one,
you got to treat it like a band. You got to treat it like you got to grind.
Yes.
And you got to like it, obviously, but it's not like you're going to, it's not like doing a YouTube channel where you can blow up. You can blow up with some talent and get in the algorithm and be like a Scott DeWaz where you're talented, you get favored a little bit by the algorithm, people like you, and then you're a sensation and have a freaking TV show coming out in a couple of years. Podcasting is like, there's some, not luck involved, but there's no like magic potion, I believe.
You can catch fire with a topic, but even as we've learned, that doesn't always last forever.
No. So that's the thing about podcasting. So it's like, you got to grind like a band and just work your way up. It's almost like it has to be grassroots, like a band. For making videos, for retro gamers, my advice is just do something you enjoy and don't think you're going to be huge from it. Retro gaming is such a niche of a niche topic. It's like you got modern gaming and then you have retro gaming, which is like down the gutter compared to like modern gaming in terms of popularity. And they've been done to death. Like the edutainment thing is in vogue right now. Like documentary style, like YouTubers doing topics about, oh, Nintendo, PlayStation, and things like that. Or like Norm Gaming Historian does, you know, the great documentary style stuff. Like, but that's a lot of work. It's a lot of research, a lot of editing. So my advice would be to, like, I don't know, like, do what you enjoy and you think you're good at, I guess, for that. In terms of streaming,
it's awful, man.
See, I love streaming the commercials every Wednesday, twitch.tv/countrycode. I don't like playing games while streaming, I've decided, because I can't concentrate on the games and then do well at them, especially retro games, and keep track of the chat. There's no way I can play through Ninja Gaiden with a chat going on. No, I can't do that. Or Mike Tyson's Punch Out. No, I need to be zoned in. But then, like, people want interaction. They want to, and it's hard for me for that. So, but some people do it. Some people make a go of it. And they're funny, and they do have like memes that show up in their retro gaming. There's a lot of good retro gaming streamers. It's just not for me. I've decided, or the hell I put myself through trying to beat Unreal a couple years ago.
Oh right,
a year and a half ago I was like, yeah, I'm never doing that again.
Right,
because it was frustrating. I don't like being frustrated with people watching me like that. I'm not having fun doing that. I like it to be loosey goosey, no pressure, just a hangout. That's how I like it. I like to hang out. So treat it like a hangout.
Like the kids call those chill vibes streams.
Chill vibe streams?
Chill vibes. Chill vibes only.
Chill vibes only? Yeah, that's how I like my hangouts. You know, talk about burgers and 80s asses and the fashion and the big hair and things like that. That's what makes it fun. And then, you know, reminisce about toys, and maybe I'll cyber stalk someone who shows up in a commercial and they give their full name talking about aspirin. I'll be like, oh, what are they doing 35 years later? And it's good fun time. That's going to turn an advertiser for my Twitch channel, basically, because I don't know what else to say about it. Did you ever think about like the mindset it takes to be like a streamer, like what putting yourself through that constantly?
Yeah, I have, and it's, I don't know, it's crazy.
Because even I can't do that. Once a week for me is perfect, but like every day.
I have friends who do it, and I admire them a lot because that takes a.
You put yourself out there.
It takes a real sort of resolve that I think some of the people I know I talk to would laugh at me for saying this, but I do think it takes a comfort level in yourself that I don't have. I mean, you have to be. I don't mind streaming if I'm doing it with Vonnie or Lincoln or like when we would stream for the marathons or whatever. I didn't mind that. It's when I have to play a game decently.
Yes.
And also keep my mouth moving and be interesting.
Yes.
Not just some fucking slack jawed dude on a couch. And like I get very, very self-aware of streaming. Like suddenly, like I'll be like, yeah,
freeze up.
It's like, oh my God, there's 25 people watching me sit here and do fucking nothing.
But sometimes they like it. They just want a friend or someone to hang out with. That's a lot of it.
I don't know. I wish I could have gotten comfortable with it. It would be a fun way, I think, to hang out with some of my friends, you know, who live all over the place. But I got to have someone in that room with me.
Yeah, you have someone to take the heat, so to speak.
Just someone I can talk to, so I'm not talking to myself.
That's the thing. One important thing to note on all three of these, streaming, YouTube, podcasts, you're performing.
Yeah.
Even if you're thinking you're just on a podcast and you're just talking to someone or talking, you're still performing for an audience. It's a performance still, and doesn't mean you got to be someone else or do something wacky, but you're still performing. And there's right. a different mindset to that I guess I'm used to since I had a radio show in college, and I was always used to doing things, and I've been on YouTube for 15 years. You're always doing something for an audience, and that's a different mindset. And I think audiences subconsciously realize that, and that they might not turn off if you're not performing, but it's definitely different.
Sure.
It's a performance at the end of the day. You're entertaining people. Ian, we got voice messages to listen to.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Let's get a couple of them in there.
Anchor.fm/TheCityPodcast. Oh, you got 20 minutes.
Them in there.
Leave a short, hopefully under 30 seconds, 20 second voicemail. We like him the best. Here's the first one.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Satanic Panic from Spokane, Washington. And recently, Metal Jesus Rocks posted a video from a retro road trip he took to my town and featured a store that I kind of have an ethical issue with. My main issue with the store is the selling of reproduction counterfeit cards. Repros being things like multi-cards with different labels, and counterfeits being reproductions with the same label not identified as a reproduction. Now, I don't have an issue with RetroPies or ROMs, but I do have an issue with selling ROMs. In the video, I can see Metal Jesus looking through the case containing these games, and I kind of just wish he maybe would have called him out a bit for this. I know he's a nice guy, and I love his channel, but it just bummed me out that he decided not to address it. Anywho, I just wanted to get your thoughts on game stores selling reproductions or counterfeits, and also the responsibility of retro gaming ambassadors as it pertains to these types of things. Thanks.
All right, I want to step on any toes, and I'm not going to speak for Metal Jesus here. Is it the responsibility of ambassadors? I would like to see people call out bad behavior in stores.
Yes.
I would like for that to happen. I'm not going to lie. I'm not saying, you know, he should. I don't know the situation. I don't know if he should like yell at them or like confront them on camera.
Yeah, without seeing the video, I'd have to see, you know, the situation. I also understand not wanting to create a scene.
Yeah.
But I definitely do not agree with selling repros. And I would have left Luna if Treg did that. I mean, and that was one of the reasons why I stayed at Luna for so long. I always thought Treg was very, very ethical when it came to stuff like that. No repros. No bootlegs, nothing like that. No reproduction labels. Like make sure it's what it was when it came in.
Ethics and retro gaming. There you go. The thing about it is, like, you see it at conventions sometimes. Unfortunately, you'll see boots, and they're selling just repro stuff or AliExpress stuff, and most conventions don't allow it. Most conventions will be like, no, this isn't allowed.
Right.
Like PRG doesn't allow that stuff. Because they realize it's illegal, but it just doesn't speak to, I guess, the heart of the culture of what retro gaming is.
No, at all. It'd be like going to a fashion show and then allowing room for knockoff bootleg shit. I mean, it's the same both ways. You're not speaking to what is heart of the scene, I guess.
You're not honoring the art itself by allowing the counterfeits.
Sure.
It's disrespectful. It's disrespectful. If you're selling that stuff. So next one here.
Hi, Pat and Ian. This is Mike from Jersey.
Mike?
This question is for both of you. Do you think we'll ever get to a point where digital copies of video games can be bought and sold? And if so, what do you think that ecosystem will look like? Thanks, guys. Great show. Keep it up.
What would that ecosystem look like? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, my answer to this is easy. Yes, I think at some point they'll figure that out. No, I have no idea what it's going to look like.
I don't know how that can look like, just because, you know, with digital games, you already had the issue with people trying to like buy games on Steam and beat them within 2 hours and get their money back for them. Like that, it would just be a maelstrom of people buying and selling, trying to constantly. It could crash some game markets, I could maybe picture.
Yeah,
it could be bad. It could be weird by doing that. And plus, there's always going to be NFTs minting it, and would, you know, fucking burn up a ton more energy.
You don't need NFTs to do it. You need a fucking online database.
Well, I don't.
It doesn't
know.
Have to be NFTs.
I don't know.
Hey guys, this is Chano from Baltimore. Was wondering if you had any specific restaurants you look forward to going to when you're visiting various cities for conventions. Shout out to the Perky, right around the corner from Greater Philadelphia Expo Center.
The Perky.
Always a highlight of too many games. Peace.
Not familiar with that one.
Pine State Biscuits is one that I always do in Portland.
What is it?
Pine State Biscuits. You've had it before. You always act like it's crazy when I talk about Pine State Biscuits. It's where we always go for breakfast in Portland. It's the place that is also a pizzeria inside.
I never went there with you
either. I know. I've tried to get you to go.
So why do you say like I had it before?
Because I've tried to get you there a billion times, and every time you act like you've never heard of this place. Because I tried to get you to go there with Norm, Vonnie, and I once, and you were like, why do I want biscuits? And then I told you like what I had for breakfast, and you were like, where'd you go? And I said, Pine State Biscuits.
All right. Fuck me then. It looks delicious. I'll go next time.
Christ. It's really, really
good. We'll go next October when PRG comes back.
Actually, PRG is kind of the big one for me with food. The other place is Lardo. I always go there with my friend Chris, who owns, he did Windy City Gaming, and now he does UCW Computers. That's a really great deli that does a bunch of just like fantastic sandwiches. They do these fries that they fry up in like pork fat with pork cricklins, and it's good stuff, man. Portland is like one of my favorite places in the world.
I wish I knew the pizza place at Long Island.
That was good.
That was one of the best pizzas I've ever had. I'm not even joking. That was like incredible.
It was a very good pizza.
Twisted Root. When I'm in DFW for Retrobalooza, Twisted Root, great burger place.
Oh, that's a burger place. You've talked about that place.
We almost always go there. Damn it, intermittent fasting. Really fresh burgers. They have a variety of meats. They used to have more before COVID.
Meats.
You go there, you can get bison, you can get elk, you can get ostrich. Like you can get these like weird things you can't get most places. But they have a pickle bar, Ian.
God, I love pickles, man.
They have a pickle bar. They have a jalapeno pickle. They have a dill pickle. They have a bread and butter pickle.
Yeah! Love pickles.
They have a wasabi pickle. So they give you these little ketchup.
I want to go get a jar of pickles and just eat them.
Hey, next year, it's always open invite, I believe, the Retropalooza. So they give you the little fucking ketchup things to
fill. Yeah, the pickles.
But for pickles, though, I want a Ziploc bag of pickles. I'm there, like, balancing five of these things.
That's the Mexican restaurant way, the places that have the free hot carrots. That you always get, like, the tiny little cups because they don't want you fucking taking a satchel of them home.
I'll fucking bring a giant
Ziploc. How do you
feel
about the hot carrots? I love hot carrots.
How do I feel, Ian?
Yeah. You like hot carrots?
If you were one, I'd eat it right now. Giant Ian. It's like the popsicle. I'm seeing you as a giant. You're dressed like a fucking carrot right now.
Oh,
you're dressed like a hot carrot.
Where's Jeremiah when we need him?
That was years ago already.
Was that Jeremiah? I think that had.
Oh yeah, that was our first run in. I believe
that was good stuff.
Next one.
Hi Pat and Ian, this is Connor, proud owner of a Silent Service for NES, autographed by Mr. Ian.
What's up, guy?
Here's my question.
I'm not already.
What are games that are pretty good to play when you're shit faced drunk? Tried to start up Final Fantasy 15, and that was a total failure. But after a few beers, the Splatterhouse reboot goes down perfectly. Thanks, guys. Been a fan for as long as I can remember.
It's been a while.
I like Connor. Connor asked me if I would just randomly online one day, like, and this was a couple of years ago, very boldly was like, hey, would you send me a signed Silent Service cart? And I was like, yeah, sure. Give me
one. Oh, you just got one off the shelf?
Yeah,
one of the 87?
I got one off the shelf, signed it, and sent it off. That was fun. You know, I don't have an answer for this because I find the more I drink, the less I can't play video games. I can't do it for a long period of time. I could do like arcade games. I could do like I could, you know, flip through a Namco museum and have a good time, but I cannot play like a story based game or an RPG or anything like that if I've had drinks. I can't.
Only 13 sealed silent services in the water population.
That's
only
13. That's kind of weird.
People played them.
Yeah,
The boomers played them. That was their game du jour. The boomers game right there.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Chris Taliaferro here in beautiful Maple Shade, New Jersey, with a question for you both.
Jersey.
Have you ever had a game that you didn't really enjoy, that maybe it just pissed you off, you weren't having a good time with it, but you still felt compelled to complete? Thanks.
Complete? I don't know, but I will tell you that I got Xbox Game Pass last night, and I fucking saw Destiny 2 on there, and it's like, hey, it's free, and it's like, do I want to try playing fucking Destiny for the third time? Every single time I try to do it, I fucking hate it, but here I am, probably going to play Destiny 2 again, because I don't know what it is about it. I hate that game, but I'm probably going to waste time on it again.
Is that a game you can beat?
I mean, you could probably beat it, but yes, I've played lots of games that I don't like, and I've tried to go back to them to like them again, and it's a dumb thing.
Keep leveling up, right, and getting more stuff. It's like, yeah. Raid Shadow Legends.
No, it's a first person shooter.
No, I mean, it's like a Raid Shadow Legends. You can't beat that. You just keep leveling up. Yeah,
you just keep doing. I mean, eventually you'll get to a point where you can't do anything more. You can complete all the story missions.
Gotcha. Yeah, for me, every game you had as a kid, because that's all you had and you liked it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's it. You got Rampage, you better play it for a couple hours, because, you know, you're not getting another game for 5 months when your birthday rolls around.
Well, my first experience with Dragon Warrior was kind of that way. I mean, a game that I love now and consider one of my absolute favorites. I got it for Christmas. It was the first RPG I'd ever played. The first week I had it, I didn't fucking get it. I didn't really know what I was doing. And then my mom and my dad sat down with me and showed me how to play it. And over time, I realized that not all video games have to be these, like, action-based, you know, reflex-based affairs.
Did you not see what Nintendo tried to indoctrinate us? You didn't read all about it and the fucking huge explorers app.
I had played computer games like that, but I'd never seen anything like that on a console.
I never beat Dragon War. I got 98% through and I stopped for some reason. My sister on her character beat. I saw my sister beat the dragon at the end. I don't know why it stopped.
The Dragon Lord.
Dragon Lord.
Hey, Pat and Ian. My name is Chris Santiago, upstate neighbor here in Prunedale, California.
Prunedale.
Been watching your show for years, left a lot of comments in here in different videos here and there. Anyhow, my question is, what game franchise would you love to see as a collection that has not been previously released in a collection? I would love to see the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles collection. Hopefully, maybe somehow, some way that can exist. What about you guys? Cool, thanks.
I would love to see an R-Type collection that acknowledges any of the R-Type games, like, kind of in between. Most of the big re-releases have been re-releases of 1 and 2. I would really like to see a re-release package that include. There was the Retrobit one that has Super and 3 on a cartridge, but that's not on PC. I would love to see, like, a PC or a all-console, like a modern console collection that covers R-Type, R-Type 2, R-Type 3, R-Type Leo. Yeah, I'd really like to see that. And then I'm getting annoyed with these retro collections that don't include everything, and I think it might have something to do with developers who has the rights, because they're releasing a Valus collection. It's already out in Japan, and it's coming to the US for Switch. There's 4 main Valus games. It only has Valus 1 through 3. I hate it when that happens. Like, what's the point?
I looked up one and it exists. Did we talk about this? Don't hit me. In the Kunio Kun World Classes collection? Did that come out here?
Yes, it did. I have it. You can get it on sale for like $5 all the time.
Okay. I said don't get mad at me. He said, yes, Pat. Like, yes, disappointed. Pat. Like, I dropped.
We have. I'm pretty sure we've talked about
it. Okay, I forget things. That would have been one. I was like, this has to be on. I looked it up.
Yeah.
Did it come out in physical form? It was a box art.
It's on its way here in physical form.
Okay.
Via limited run. It's been out in digital for a long time.
Okay. Well, that'll be a limited run. Well, maybe I picked that up. I want to play Super Dodgeball.
You'll be able to get it at Luna Video Games.
Oh, so Karen Limited Run? All right.
We set that up. We set that up before I left.
All right. Cool. Other than that, I couldn't think of, well, I don't know. For you, Ian, the Family Stadium. How about that? Get the Family Stadium collection. That'd be fun.
Femista. It'd be fun to see the years of it.
Pat, Sergeant Zombie here. And did I hear you right? You were bragging about having long hair and not seeing Reanimator. Are you some kind of commie? I'm deeply offended. I didn't serve in the Cola Wars to be disrespected by some long-haired punk. But to make it right, how about you drop and give me $20, not push-ups. I like to hit people where it really hurts. Then, watch the Romero original trilogy or the movies Ian mentioned. I know Ian will want to help because he's your friend and knows you need a good zombie education. Gotta go. Me and my fellow zombies are heading to the mall. We're meeting some people over there for dinner.
Oh, Sergeant Zombie. Oh, it is a second or third time. Sergeant Zombie.
You really should watch Reanimator. It's just so fucking good.
All right. You should. Well, you finally watched Big Trouble Little China.
I sure did.
And you were like, why didn't I fucking see this 35 years ago?
That's right. You'll feel the same way about Reanimator.
Hey, guys. It's Alex from Winnipeg. I just wanted to say, Ian, since you said that you were leaving Luna and you're moving on to something new, I just noticed you've been in such a good mood, man, and you've made some really funny jokes the last little bit, and I just wanted to, like, wish you all the best and everything. It sounds like things are really working out for you and stuff. And, like, dude, like, about a month or so ago, when you made that joke about Tommy Tallarico being the kind of guy who would think a sex worker was in love with him, dude, I laughed so fucking hard. I almost crashed my work truck. I was laughing so hard. Like, dangerous, man. Dangerously funny. But you know what isn't dangerous? UltimateNintendo.com.
Oh!
Pins.
It's not.
Collectibles, a certain NES and SNES guidebook, and all kinds of other cool shit. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. Love the show, guys. Take it easy.
Oh, thank you.
That was very good. Thank you.
Brilliant. Checks in the mail there.
Good stuff.
Couple more?
I can do like one more.
Just one?
Yeah.
You want someone to check in with us?
Yeah.
See what's happening? Maybe it was Thanksgiving for someone, one of our friends here.
Hey, it's Tommy. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, because I sure did. I went up to Turkey Point with the fam and didn't exactly eat turkey because I'm a vegetarian, but I had some tofurkey, or as I like to call it, placeholder turkey. And I was thinking about you two jerk-offs and how sorry I feel for the people in your family that probably refer to you as the gaming racist uncle they got to see every year. And it's your fault I'm still getting messages about ordering Domino's when I was in Boston. Like, seriously, what if I did? How do you know we don't have a Yonoid game coming out on the Amico? We were just trying to promote it. I got partnerships, Pat. I got partnerships you don't even know about. You just think about that anytime you do business anywhere, because you're never going to know. Did someone spit in your Wendy's burger? Did someone do a little more than spit in it? Or is there anything shiny going on in that bowl of magic spoon? No, you're just being paranoid. Eat up, Pat. Like you said, it's good for you. It's real good for you.
Oh, boy. We've sent him off.
I know. we've really... Man, I'm sorry for making that throwaway joke about Domino's. My God. Now Tommy's going to get my food spit in at Wendy's. My Baconator.
Breaking the fourth wall for a minute. Placeholder turkey is extremely funny to me.
That's really funny.
It's one of the better ones.
Placeholder jerks.
One of the better jokes.
We got to start working in placeholder more, I think. Yeah. Placeholder turkey.
All right.
Well, that was funny.
That was good. We got it done.
90 minutes of fun-filled adventures.
Yeah. Yeah. Off to work. Then a nap.
Then some writing. And watch the War of Your Sons.
Yeah, maybe.
Got to catch it, Ian.
Maybe.
Got to catch fever. Little Steph Curry. This is an MVP year. He's coming back. Coming back.
All right, folks. See you in a week.
See you.
Bye.
Oh, check out, we talk about our Thanksgiving adventures. Patreon.com/CU Podcast.